Back to the 80s Radio. And if you just joined us, you've come to the right place. Because to my right, your left, or maybe to my light, to my right, to my left, your right.
And the light in the sky.
Is the one and only infamous, the man that has had more relationships in his mind with Christy Brinkley than Billy Joel ever did in the flesh. We call him the Chang.
Yeah.
Chang, we are back here, back to the 80s Radio. Thanks for being with us and with every single fan that's out here.
You know what? Everybody out there in the 80s, my 80s babies, and my Changsters, Gangsters, and Tuskies, Huskies, how you all doing out there? Welcome back to the 80s. Yes, it's the infamous Chang, the legend in my own mind, and I am the blind driver to Toscano. I drive by Braille, do I not, my brother?
You do. You do.
Thank you very much.
Hence the nickname Chang.
That's right.
But so I want to thank you guys for joining us on another Friday edition of Back to the 80s Radio. We have been pretty busy, of course, as you know, with K-Hits 92.5. We are posting every single week our link so you can catch 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 80s music. And it has been a challenge trying to go, a full 24 hours worth of DJs, but we're going to get there, folks. We're going to get there. Starting next Tuesday, we are going to be going live once again with DJs. Now, I want you all to keep in mind that our official launch for the radio station, right now we're in sort of, I guess the word is beta testing mode. But we're going to be going live October 31st. That's right, Halloween.
Which falls
on a Sunday. And that is our official launch day. We are going to be going live that day for you and offering nothing but the very best of 80s music, our bigger 80s music library than any other radio station you can
think of. Damn straight. Tell them.
So, if you just joined us, we also have a Facebook page. We have the rest, but our Facebook page is where we'd like to hear from you. We'd like to get your messages, and if you have any ideas for topics on shows, go ahead and write us in. I want to send a big shout out to Sam Dupree, who is always backing us up. Also, a big shout out to Monty, who is somewhere in the Midwest, maybe the east of the United States, somewhere. Mm-hmm. And also a big shout out to anybody wearing a black t-shirt with no sleeves that says Homeboy. So a big shout out to any homeboys out there. And a big shout out to all the countries that make what we are, who we are, what we are. So thank you for supporting with your ears back to the 80s. Every single country out there, there's just too many to name. But anywhere starting from the letter A to the letter Z, you guys mean the world to us.
That's right. I want to give a big shout out to everybody in the armed forces. I also want to give a shout out to all our first responders, our hospital staff, our doctors, our nurses, our paramedics, our police, our fire department, anybody that had to go out there in the fear of what we were going through and hit it face off. How you all doing? What we do it for you. We try to make you laugh. And I also want to give a big shout out to everybody out there right now wearing a brown t-shirt that is formed to your muscular build. You know who you are. You know. And if yours says Army, I want you to make your chest dance right now. Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, do it. Yes.
I just like that. Pop your pecs.
The A and the Y were going A, 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 A.
We are going to continue our talk here of going back to the 80s. Now, we've mentioned to you many times before that the 80s had, most of it was good.
Right.
But there were stuff that was bad. And today we're going to talk about some of that stuff that was not so good.
Right.
And unfortunately, the topic of the day has hit a lot of people, if you were from the 80s, really close to home.
So on that note, you guys keep it locked and loaded to Back to the 80s. We are going to take off, pay some bills, come right back, and we're going to dive into some conversation that hopefully isn't a little bit too much for you, but we're going to put a light spin on it.
Back to the 80s Radio. We'll be right back.
Did you subscribe to-
bam, bubble, bam, bubble, boozler. Slam, bubble, bam, bubble, boozler.
Remember when we thought the 80s were lame? That's because we hadn't lived through this decade yet.
You're listening to Back to the 80s.
That, fans, was Bamboozler by the 80s band Ampage.
We are going to dive headfirst in a topic that is a little fun and a little sad. Tonight's topic, we are going to talk about the fails and the trials and tribulations and the good times of toxic drug use and alcohol use in the 80s in comparison to maybe some of the drugs and alcohol and the scenarios we have nowadays. Now, Toscano,
yeah.
I ask you, okay, what was your first type of alcohol that you digested and how old were you?
Well, see, I grew up in an Italian household.
Oh, so 9 years old.
So I want to say around 7 or 8 years old.
Whoa, man!
my dad and my dad's friends when we used to go over. But see, I wasn't here in the United States, so I was living in Argentina.
Oh, so that made it okay.
That made it okay.
Forget about it. You're because in Italy. Everybody drinks at 7.
Because it's cultural. It's a cultural thing. So what they do is they give you an 8-ounce glass, but only filled maybe about an inch or two with red wine, and then they'll fill up the rest with soda water. And that's really? Just so you can get your palate used to drinking wine. So by the time you're, full-blown 12, you start drinking a half a glass of wine with your asado, which is your beef, all these different kinds of meat, and with your pasta.
Jeez.
So I think it started, 7 or 8. And then when I was around 12, I think I had my first, I would sneak into the refrigerator and get some beers.
Oh, and now when did you start carrying a .45 in your briefs?
That was until later on in my years. But but I would say, between 7 and then 12, my first time that I actually got a drunk. Mm-hmm. So let me paint you the story. My best friend and I, Mark Hernandez, were ditching school.
What a little Mark. Love
but
you all.
Here's the thing. We were ditching school at my house. So
what?
Yeah, because my mom was working all day, so we just went. Yeah. We went to school, but we just came back,
Right. Yeah.
And so we went to my house, and I made the mistake.
You guys play remember Ultra back? Boy?
In, no. So remember back in the 80s, most of the houses had screen doors, right? You had your front door, and most houses had screen doors. Normal door was open, the screen door was closed, but you can still see out, and then from out you can still see in.
All right.
So Mark pulls out a little, flask, and he goes, "Here, have some." I think it was Southern Comfort. I think it was.
I remember that stuff like yesterday.
Some sweet stuff, right? And then I said, "Oh, that's nothing. Let me show you this." And I pulled out a jug of Julio Gallo wine.
Oh, typical Italian.
Which is like the cheapest wine you can get.
Then you put your .45 on the table.
Well, no. Yeah. First, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. So, and the funny thing is, my mom and dad had already divorced by this time, but my dad would come pick me up once in a while. And I said, "Check this out. I'm going to down this bottle of wine as much as I can gulp down."
Yeah.
So I literally, and Mark at this time was so drunk, He passed out like somewhere in the hallway of my house.
Wow.
And
man,
that's
a bust.
Yeah. So I got the bottle and I started chugging it. So all you can hear is. So as I'm chugging down the bottle of wine, which, by the way, we do not condone or recommend anybody doing this. Plus, wine has 14% alcohol. A beer only has 5. Okay.
Right.
So check this out.
That's why I didn't mess around with beer.
So once. I was about halfway through my chugging of the red wine. I hear a whistle at the front door like this. And I realized as my back is towards the door that that is my dad's whistle. And he was standing at the door. So because he only saw the backside, my back.
He didn't see you chugging the wine.
Right. So I scooted it over. And as soon as I turned around, because I was around 13 years old, 14. And as soon as I turned around, that thing just slammed my head, and immediately everything in the room started moving around. And I mean with force. I could not see a straight path to my dad.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how it happened, but I kind of faked it very well. So I said, hi, Dad. And he goes, wasn't there class today? And I said, well, it was the teacher's meeting today. And
he, nice comeback.
Yeah. And he goes, good. Come on. And all this time, Mark's passed out in the hallway in my house. Okay.
He left his ass there.
So I left him in my house. My dad goes, come on, we're going to go to lunch. And my dad takes me to this. All right. You can make fun of it. He takes me to Marino's Italian restaurant.
Oh, man. All the Guidos putting down their guns. Hey, this is, what's going on, man? What kind of piece you got?
Yeah, yeah. It's a very classic little hole in the wall, but very fancy restaurant. And
bunch of shark skin suits.
By this time, oh, yeah. No, everybody, you could see everybody's reflection on their Valentino suits.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Everybody's packing a doctor bat.
When we sat down, the owner of the restaurant goes, hey, Marito, how you doing? You're here, right? Everybody's saying hi to me in the restaurant.
Yeah.
They had no idea that I couldn't see straight. And I go, that's it. If they know that something's going on, I'm just in deep trouble.
I'll beat you mob style.
Yeah, so nobody could tell. But when the food came, and I'm sorry I'm making this story long, but I had to.
Oh, man. Couldn't
eat. When the food came, I had my hand on the fork, but I couldn't find my face to feed myself. So I took the fork, and with my thumb and my pinky, I held the fork. With my thumb, I touched my face and guided it to my mouth. True story. My dad never found out until before he died. I literally told him, Dad, remember such and such day you took me to that place? Oh, yeah, you seemed a little weird. Yeah, because I was drunk.
That's funny, man. You know what? I got a lot of stories like that with my pops, too. I think I was 13, maybe. Yeah, I was about 13 the first time I had alcohol. And that's when I was an altar boy at St. Benedict's.
Yeah.
With my two buddies and my cousins, Phil Solano and Pete Solano.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
And we were serving mass, and we had a funeral to do. You know, nice. So we're in the back, and you know, when you're an altar boy, you got to put like three or four of those freaking robes on. You know, you got to look something like an Iron Maiden video back then, you know. And we were hungry, man. We were there like 7:30, and we were like hungry. So we started eating the hosts before we thought it was cool, because they weren't really Jesus's body yet. Right. They were just some little crackers in a bowl right there. They were fresh, right? So we started chowing on those bad boys. Well, they make you incredibly thirsty.
Yeah, so you start drinking the wine.
Back then, bro, we didn't have water coolers, so you got to go outside into the parking lot, a school parking lot, and drink out of the fountain where it's like ground coolness, so it's like warm.
Yeah.
And it was just bad news. We went back in, and it was like we had paste in our mouth, so we decided to drink some of the priest, Ernest and Julio sweetness.
Oh, yeah.
And we got popped by a priest while we were chugging that stuff, man. That was the first time I was with alcohol. After that, it was just like I graduated from wine to beer. And then beer kind of, you know, makes you go pee all the time. And I was like, well, that's a bust, you know?
Yeah.
I can't go home always peeing.
No, it's not
my mom
work.
Will know what's cracking, right? So
right.
I kept drinking beer, and I kept having to pee. I was like 15 years old. My mom finally figured it out. You know, you better not be drinking. So then I started doing cocaine. That way, cocaine would keep
now,
me amped up.
You
so
did
I'm not
cocaine
going home.
At 15?
Oh, yeah, man. I was
Holy
doing cocaine,
moly.
Marijuana, mushrooms, acid.
Holy cow.
Cross tops, black beauties. Yeah, I started partying hardy early, bro. I definitely lived the lifestyle of the rock and roll. You know what I mean?
Holy
sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So
and then some.
Alcohol was that first drug, bro. And I found that when you're young, you know, you don't have what it takes to handle alcohol. So, man, you get smashed right away.
Oh, yeah.
Like
hardcore. Yeah.
Remember one time I was like 16 and we went to the Fiesta 4 drive-in.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
And we were chugging a pony keg. And, my mom knew we went to the theater, to the movies, and they dropped me off and they left me at the door. I was so hammered. And my mom had to find me on the front porch.
Nice.
Passed out, stone drunk, vomit all over my Judas
really?
Priest shirt. Oh, yeah, man. I got grounded probably for about a month, but she had no idea I was sneaking out the back bedroom window. and I was just cranking on my music inside with a lock inside with incense. So it sounded like I was in my room, but I was really out causing havoc.
You ever find that people that are drunk always are the hardest to wake up?
Yes.
Like they're okay. Even drunk, they're okay. Even when you know they're sleepy, they're okay. But if you let them close their eyes for any more than 1 second,
they're done.
They're done.
Yeah.
And you can throw a rock at their forehead.
Yeah.
They're not waking
and then
up.
They'll wake up and they'll say something obnoxious and they won't remember it.
Or they'll wake up to say, I want some pancakes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've been there.
I want some Del Taco.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Del Taco. That reminds me of you walking through the the parking lot at Super A at 2 a.m.
Yeah, down Telegraph over there in Santa Fe Springs.
That's right.
If you are just joining us here at Back to the 80s Radio, we are talking about some of the experiences that we had. Of course, we make them sound funny, but they weren't necessarily the brightest ideas.
No, they were not.
Our first experiences with some of the stuff that adults used to do back then. In my case, it was alcohol.
Right.
And by the way, Chang, that you mentioned drugs at an early age. The first time I saw cocaine was a kid in the second grade brought a little vial that belonged to his brother.
That was mine, that little bastard.
Shoot, it must have been like 1980 or 1981. I forget, it's a little brown vial, but they're clear, but the color is brown of the vial.
Right.
Real small, and you can see the white inside. And he goes, this is my buddy goes, this is my brother's. He goes, this is cocaine. And he goes, I'm going to put it up my nose right now. And he goes, do you want some? And I go, no way. That's bad. You know, I can imagine. I have no idea how I answered. But I told him, no way. And I went directly to my teacher. And I said, is cocaine bad for you? And that was the first question out of my teacher. Oh, because Lewis is in the bathroom and he stole his brother's little cocaine and he's in the bathroom. Well, my buddy got suspended from school. The police went to look for his brother.
Oh, man. That's just a bad high. That's a high gone wrong.
Hey, I had no idea. So I was a little snitch that moment. But I had no idea. You know what I mean? That was my first experience with that.
You know what's good crazy? Times. My first experience with cocaine came upon, I'm not going to give any names, but I had a cousin that was a drug dealer. And I used to go hang out with my cousins quite a bit, like when I was 15, you know, 15 all through high school.
Yeah.
My cousin, he was pretty known where he was from. Everybody knew the brothers. You know, my cousins were some pretty known cats. We had a great time. I love them all like brothers. And I'll never forget me and my cousin. His younger brother, who was my age, I won't give my cousin's name in case he's listening, but I know he remembers. We went to go see his brother, and we wanted to get some bud because we were going to go out and we're going to go party at a place called Flat Tops, which was between El Sereno and Pasadena, that area of L.A. And we went to his pad and we got some weed, and he was like, hey, man, and we're have a couple of beers with me before I cut out. So we're drinking Löwenbräus and Mickey's. Now, by this time, me and my cousin, we're already professional drinkers and professional marijuana smokers. We're just over the age of 15, almost at 16.
Right. And these were the days of Schlitz, right?
Yes. No, brother. We were drinking Mickey's, brother. We were drinking Mickey's and Wild Turkey, Löwenbräu. Heine's came into
play.
Holy
moly. Yeah.
I started very young, bro. And I'm not condoning what I did. And I'm not glorifying it. So anybody out there listening can think it's cool or go out and try it. I'm merely giving you my comical spin on some of the stupidity that I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we went to my cousin's pad and he literally bent our arms behind our backs and made us do our first line of blow.
Really?
And from then on, bro, it was boom.
You got you.
It was a necessity of every weekend. You know what I mean?
So,
it was a necessity.
Let me ask you, because I've never done it, but is this something that, because I hear different stories from different people. Some people, I guess it catches them right away. Some people it doesn't. You think the majority of people, it catches you, like it gets you hooked the first time?
Yeah. You know why, bro? They call it chasing the dragon, because you are always in chase of that same feeling that you got the first time that you ingested it.
Which is
so
what?
Which is total joy. You feel overjoyed. You feel empowered. You feel in a weird way, a little bit sexual, a little bit stronger, a little bit less in touch with reality. You okay. think you're okay. you think you're more powerful than you
than
really
what
are.
You really are. Yeah.
Right. So that type of feeling, that type of a rush, you know, it becomes addicting. Right. So when you do use, you're constantly trying to get back that feeling again. Yeah. But, you know, it really doesn't come back. You know, you can do it and do it and do it. You'll get it, but you'll never get the same feeling.
Right, right.
They call it chasing the dragon.
Yeah. And also, and one of the things that it reminds me of, because that dopamine goes up so high.
Right.
One of the things in the 80s that really brought up that dopamine in your brain was music. Right. And I guess
exactly.
I guess that's why it went so well with rock music.
Yeah.
I say went so well, not in a good way. I'm not glorifying. I'm just saying why it was so accepted was because of the high that you got with that and the high that you get with music.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, if we're talking about that, the good point you brought that out. If you go back into the era, probably your parents, my parents, my dad listened to cats like Cannonball Adderley, Billie Holiday, you know, old school kind of blues, jazz, soul, big band. A lot of people back then were using marijuana and heroin. And it's odd because in rock and roll, you know, because it stayed heroin, marijuana, alcohol, cocaine, amphetamines. So the vibe has always been there, I think, when it comes into musicians and drugs. Just right. Different generations, different eras brought out different drugs.
Sure.
And different type of vibes that guys, people were using.
Yeah.
But it's just along the same lines, bro. It is very easy. You know what I mean? When you're all pumped up on rock and roll to just sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's interesting because in the 80s, and you'll hear this if you're just joining us, you'll hear this up ahead in the program as we interview Mark Mason from Ampage. You'll hear how the 80s as an era, it was a place where everything was done in excess. Mm-hmm. And everything from the music to the movies to the relationships to the heartaches, even the food back then, much bigger food. When it comes to drugs and alcohol, then you get people like the President of the United States and his wife with a new program called Say No to Drugs, or Just Say No, I think was the program.
Yeah, Just Say No.
And
Monkey Boy.
Yeah, and it really hit hard in a successful way, I guess. The school system, right? I mean, everybody in schools were aware of that program.
It brought a lot of the good concept and the morals of parenthood together. It did make some money for the schools programs. But, you know, tonight we're going to dig deep into the nitty and the gritty, the dirty and the funny. But it's funny because you brought up the monkey president, Ronald Reagan, and him and Nancy's supposed war on drugs, Just Say No. And it's quite peculiar because if you look at research and history, they were hanging out with some of the big name drug cartels that were smuggling cocaine and heroin and marijuana into our
That's
country.
Right.
And they were also giving weapons and taking cash payments for helicopters to drop this stuff off, you know, in areas that were decimal, where there were no people.
Right.
Back in the 80s, crack cocaine came out, and crack cocaine was actually a drug that was made by the government and supposedly told that let's put it in the poor community's hands so we can start killing off the herd. So right. It's very funny that you bring up Ronald Reagan, and we are talking about this tonight on the 80s, because, you know, you have the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Sure.
Of all drugs, where they kind of started at, the magnitude they took, and kind of, you know, hopefully we give you some real stories on what it really was like back in the 80s with the drug war and what you could easily fall into when you use drugs.
But Chang, let me ask you a question, because you were older than I was in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 80s, you were, you know, you what? You graduated high school in 83. I was barely, you know, 11 years old in 83.
Yeah.
And so what about those people that are saying, oh, come on, it wasn't the government who started this all. You know, it was X or Y or Z. But don't blame the president. He was trying to do something positive. What would you say? I mean, your father was an activist.
Right.
And he was somebody who was, you know, sought after as well, for what he knew as well. And
right.
And you've seen deep behind enemy lines.
Right. I would tell that person to stop hiding behind a flag just for a second or two to hold accountability where accountability needs to be held. And that is with our political leaders. And we find that very true today. People are very easily to conform around their political beliefs and lose their moral code. And I think when you lose your moral code, you're lost, you're fake. And anybody that would say you cannot blame Reagan, well, you cannot blame Reagan for maybe the individual that you knew that overdosed, or the individual that was drunk or did some dope and killed somebody that you loved in a traffic accident. But you can surely say the root of all evil came from where the evil came. And the evil came with money and politics and power. And anybody that doesn't want to grasp that reality is only fooling yourself. And you're pretty much acting like a Tipper Gore. You're acting like a Nancy Reagan. You're trying to make everything pretty in one aspect and everything negative in the other aspect, when actually, you know, the pretty and the negative are on both sides. So you have to have accountability. That's right. What I would tell that person.
Right. When you were in high school, were there, drugs running wild in high school?
You know what? When I was in high school, drugs were running wild. You know, when I left parochial school in 79, I went into high school, which was Montebello High School. You know, it, right in the heart and soul of the 80s, you're coming out of the 70s where, you know, the 70s had disco music and, you know, people were partying over at Studio 54 and discotheques. Drugs were already making its appearance there. But in the 80s, during my high school years, it seemed like drugs and alcohol were easier to obtain, kind of the social norm. In essence, it was kind of like a calm, friendly bullying. You know, oh, you don't party? Whoa, you're stupid. But, you know, they referred to it always in a positive, always in a kind of inviting, civil kind of form. You know what I mean? Yeah. Get together with people, have a good time. You're going to drink. You're going to do some dope. Everything's cool. Nobody ever thought about, you know, that one person that maybe drank too much, has to go to ER, or gets in an accident that night, and loses their life at a young age. Nobody thinks about they did too much dope and maybe they didn't come back out of it. Now, back in the 80s, it was kind of glorified a lot more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The bullying back then came if you didn't party, but if you partied a little bit, you were all cool for school. You know, they just told you, you couldn't hang. And then the next time there was a gathering and you were with people and people got loaded, and that one individual that couldn't handle getting loaded was there, usually people had a tendency to kind of babysit them. You know, okay, you're going to party, but we'll take care of you.
Yeah. And wouldn't you say, I mean, as far as what I've seen in my experience, I mean, you don't want it to be, but it seems to me that Hollywood had a huge part
in the
promulgation or the furtherance of the selling and the glorifying of drugs and alcohol. I mean, since the beginning, right?
Oh, I totally agree. Going into stand-up comedy, you know, in my later years, and seeing that drugs had still had a presence to where it was kind of the norm, kind of like everybody kind of did use at one time. It was very frequent, you know, when I was doing comedy, and that was what, 2000s, 90s, that it was, you know, right there in the rooms when you're going out before you go on stage, you know. I partook. There was other comedians that I knew watching growing up that were partaking. Same in the rock and roll music industry. You know, when I was hanging out in Hollywood in the 80s, I mean, you go to the Rainbow, you go to the Whiskey, you go to the Troubadour. I mean, any club you went to, the Roxy, you can go to the bathroom, and nine times out of 10, you're going to be seeing somebody cracking rails on a table, maybe in the bathroom. You're going to be out in one of those parking lots. You're going to be cracking rails. You're going to be smoking crack. You're going to be hot spooning it. You know, some people are going to be shooting up in the corner. Everybody's usually smoking some bud.
Have you ever seen the movie American Psycho?
Yes.
With Christian Bale? Kind of like
very
that,
much
right?
Exactly like that. You know what I mean? And a lot of people get lost at, you know, you have the rich man drugs and the poor man drugs. And that was true in the beginning. But later on in life, I mean, everybody's drug of choice was everybody's drug of choice.
Right.
Prices went down, demand went up. So if demand goes up and if you can make some money off of maybe three cats as opposed to one cat, you're going to make that money because that's three return customers as opposed to the big wig buying a fat eight ball for himself. When you can get three cats out there to buy a teener and you're selling the same eight ball, but you got three people hooked. Yeah. That's three more customers and more.
Yeah. You know, Chang, one of my biggest reasons for getting upset at a lot of people who just put down the person who's addicted to drugs without helping them. Okay. One of the biggest reasons I get mad is because a lot of the people that don't understand, because they've never been in the same shoes as that person, they don't realize how hard it must be. They are also hypocrites in many cases because they're doing other stuff. For example, some of the people that were harshest on the criticizing people that were addicted to drugs and alcohol are people who were addicted to smoking.
Right.
And I'm talking smoking cigarettes, which have probably taken more lives than any other.
Yeah, exactly, bro.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think smoking is, like you said, the number one addiction.
Yeah, that between that and the hard alcohol, I would say. Mm-hmm. But the government will try to ban things, for example, like cannabis, right?
Yes, to this day.
To this day, right? I don't remember one case of anyone overdosing on weed. Anybody. No. I'm not condoning. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just, you know, well, that's for another show. A lot of these people that are critics are people that are hooked on cigarettes, which is in some cases, these people were doing something worse than the people that were getting caught with one little cigarette with weed and being sent to 3 years in jail.
Yes.
I mean, ridiculous. Yes.
You know what? Bringing that on that note, my friend, the toxic range of a cigarette, an individual could be smoking at home and be giving toxic fumes to their children, their wife, guests. And in our era, I'm sure your dad might have smoked. Maybe your mom. Maybe you had some uncles. All those Italian mobsters you hung around with. You had to tell. You cannot tell me you were not in a room full of cigarette smoke.
Yeah, growing up, once in a while. But I found out, for example, my dad used to like smoking once in a while. He wasn't really hooked on cigarettes. He did once in a while. He smoked True, or he liked smoking pipes because I told him to smoke pipes, just like. Popeye, because I wanted him to be like Popeye, right? But my uncles used to smoke cigars, and my dad once in a while would smoke a cigar, but he goes, no, and it gets you drunk if you smoke it fast, and I'd rather spend that good hard-earned money at the horses. So
yes. You know what, man, I tried smoking a cigar one time at a buddy of mine. I forgot what buddy. It was his bachelor party.
Yeah,
you know, and I was kind of the only guy that still partook in the parting ways, as opposed to all these guys I had, you know, grown up with.
Sure.
So I was the only one that was rolling up a dollar bill and, you know what I mean? Walking around singing songs.
So wait a second. So if anybody's seen American Pie, when they're already old and they get married, were like the Stiffmeister still wanting to party.
Oh, yeah.
Like the old times, and everybody's holding their baby listening to Kenny G.
Yeah. Now, I'll just tell you, anybody that has seen the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, been there, done that way before the movie. If you can understand any of that that I just shot at you.
Wow.
Been there, done that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were there and my buddy, you know, hey, we all have to have a cigar now. And I took a couple of hits of the cigar and I started puking.
Yeah.
And I could never do another cigar after that. Half of my head hurt because I was trying to hit it like a joint, you know, to taste that sweetness. And half of my head hurt. And then I was just puking and then I had a headache. And I was like, man, you know what? I don't care if you're getting married. I'm going home. And they were like, what's the matter with you?
So
I went and I got in my car, my truck, and I sat there for a minute. And I was like, man, I can't do that.
This is the one and only Back to the 80s. We're going to be right back with a little bit more talk of the bad stuff that we all did in the 80s.
You're listening to Back to the 80s.
Yes. What I try to tell you, this country, you got to make the money first. Then when you get the money, you get the power. Then when you get the power, then you get the woman.
Now, back to good, wholesome, politically correct entertainment. Oops, wrong station. Now,
back to the 80s with Toscano and Chang.
You're listening to the one and only Back to the 80s radio show with the one and only Toscano and Chang. We were talking about and continue talking about some of the bad stuff that we used to do back in the 80s. And it's funny because we were talking about drugs and alcohol and how certain people that condemned the drug and alcohol addicted person was guilty themselves of being cigarette addicts, but they didn't consider that being anything as bad, quote unquote, as bad as doing drugs and hardcore alcohol. Do you remember? I'll never forget. There used to be a location in Southern California. Well, there were a couple of different names, but one of them was called Schick Center. And Schick Center was supposed to be a center that would allow you to go in, and obviously they would guarantee you're going to stop smoking. So I had a teacher in junior high who had gone to Schick Center, and he said it was the best thing he ever done, and it does work. And by the way, Schick Center is no longer in operation. You're going to quickly find out why. Probably more people died at Schick Center than smoking. But this is according to my teacher. This is what they did to him. I don't know if anybody else's experience was different, but my teacher said that he was a 3-pack-a-day addict. Okay,
what was his name?
Mr. Paulson. Okay, Mr. Paulson. He's probably dead. No, I take that back.
Mr. Marlboro.
He is. He's dead. So, but can you imagine cruel. 3 packs a day? All right. There's people that smoke more, a carton a day, or 2 cartons a day. So he was a 3-pack-a-day dude. How many cigarettes in a pack? I don't know. 12, 15? I don't know. A lot.
Somebody hit us on Facebook with how many cigarettes are in a pack.
I have no idea. We don't smoke, so I have no idea. So he said that he registered himself into Schick Center. And they said, okay, sir, go ahead and come in on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And he came in on a Saturday. And they took him to this little room. It was maybe 3-3. Okay,
they beat the hell talking. Out of him.
There was those school chairs, elementary school chairs.
Yes,
they were little wooden.
Was it the wooden ones or was it the plastic ones?
It was wooden with metal, so they're real heavy, right?
Dude, yes, I remember.
So
those.
They had a school chair and a school desk. That's all they had. And there was no windows in this place. And on top of the desk, they had an entire carton. They had an entire carton of cigarettes, right? They asked him, what brand of cigarettes do you smoke? And he said, Camel, right? So on top of the desk, of course, he had to pay to go into Schick Center, a lot of money. So let me tell you. So they said, here's a carton of cigarettes. Go ahead and enjoy. And he said, what? He said, go ahead and enjoy. The carton's all yours. He goes, wait a second. I just paid because I want to quit smoking. And they said, trust
us.
Tell
me I can have a cigarette.
And they said, yeah, go ahead and enjoy. So
what did he do?
They closed the door. He had his first pack. And he was starting to cough at this point because there's no windows. So when he tried to open the door, he could not open the door. He knocked and they said, I'm sorry, sir. You're not allowed out until you smoke the entire carton.
Oh, shit.
So,
some type of reverse psychology.
Right. So he had to smoke the entire carton.
Can you imagine
in this little room with no windows? And he smoked that entire carton. Obviously, he threw up all over the chair, the desk. It was disgusting.
Whoa.
And they said, thank you. Come again tomorrow. They said it'll be totally different. And so when he went in the very next day, they put him in a different room, same chair, and they locked him in there, and it was a different carton of Camel. So
can you imagine those guys are going, Chuck, get a load of this idiot. He's going to do it again just like last time. Can you believe this guy's a school teacher? This guy's a tool.
So by the time he was halfway done with that second carton, he said he threw up so much.
Oh, man.
He never again had lifted up another cigarette for his entire life. He goes, it was the way they do it, is because they put you in that little room and you're inhaling in
your own crap.
You're stuck there. You can't go pee and you can't go to the bathroom. Unless you do it there. Right. And you cannot come out until
defecate
you smoke that
all
last
over
one.
The floor. That's correct. Just defecate your camels out.
That's correct. And
so it's almost in similarity to like Scared Straight. You remember that program, right, Pearl? Back in the 80s and Scared Straight?
Yeah.
When you have a troubled teen or a big mouth punk ass fool that thinks he's badass or she thinks she's badass and you put him there with prisoners and they get threatened with getting their ass beat or their tennis shoes taken or violated sexually. Yeah. Kind of something like that.
Sort of you like know that. What? And it worked, but the problem is with Schick Center is that they had a few people die on them. So they had heart attacks in their little room, and they never came out.
Chuck, this one's not breathing. We got a dead one in here.
but they stopped smoking, so I guess.
But they stopped smoking. At least we can tell his wife, hey, he stopped smoking before he died of a massive coronary. To be happy.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry with that. I'm making a little bit of fun of it, but I'm not making fun of the person who passed away. I am enjoying the fact that how people were coming up with some ideas and making themselves multimillionaires to have an addict stop being an addict. Anyway.
You know what's funny? You bring up that topic and you're just nailing it, brother. And I'm so glad that you're bringing out cigarette smoke as something that is addicting and, life consuming. But, TV shows that I'm sure that you and me watch reruns of, Lucy, My Three Sons.
Right.
Shows like that, bro, that we were watching that were made in the 60s and 70s. Get Smart. People were lighting up and it was okay. It made it okay.
And they made it look sophisticated.
Path. But yet the 80s came, you know, bro, right? The 80s came and it glorified the drug world.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live was talking about drugs. Mary Tyler Moore was talking about drugs. Company had a little bit of drug
use. I mean, come on. Miami Vice.
And these shows were all made to kind of make comical fun of the stupidity and the wrongness of drugs, correct?
Yeah.
But yet some of these characters, bro, were lighting up on the side of a car.
That's right.
And not having to care into the world. How many times did the kids like us go to family events or go to these restaurants, bro, and everybody was smoking?
Yeah.
But yet, you know what I mean? If you went out there and you were outside caught smoking a joint or you were out there putting some powder up your nose or having a drink, you were like, oh, that's bad. You're going to die. You're just a bad guy.
Right.
And you know what's funny? Real quick. I remember getting arrested for possession of marijuana at one time. It happened in the city of, I believe it was San Gabriel, Rosemead. And I was pretty young. I think I was 20. And I was driving home from work. I got pulled over in my truck because of the way I looked. That's another story anyway. And I had some roaches in my ashtray in my Toyota 4x at this
time. Those who don't know what roaches are, they are what, Chang?
Those are the remnants of a marijuana cigarette known as a joint, which we call roaches because they actually look like roaches with no legs, but they are very dark with resin after the marijuana cigarette has been lit.
Thank you for clearing that up.
That's good stuff right there. So anyway, they carted me off, bro, to jail. And I'm in the back of the cop car with tight bracelets on, getting treated like I just mugged the hell out of somebody for having weed in my car. And I'm not even intoxicated, but I have the hair. I have the cutoff shirt, similar to what I'm wearing now.
Right.
But I had the look that fit the description. Both these stupid cops had an air con car, which was cool because I was hot, but they were both smoking cigarettes. So they had no problem with infecting me in that cop car from the crucial drive to Rosemead to Monterey Park in an air conditioned car where everything is just going in the same motion with cigarettes. And they were taking me to freaking jail for having roaches that I didn't even smoke.
That's the system for you.
The hypocrisy of the system, brother.
Yeah, that is correct. And on that note, you know, I do want to bring up, if you want to know a little bit more about some of the hypocrisy that it goes on with the whole cannabis section, you go ahead and go to YouTube and check out The Cost of Cannabis when you get a chance. Mm-hmm. The Cost of Cannabis, because it'll open your eyes to a lot of things that we thought were wrong and a lot of things that we thought were right back then. And this goes way, way back. It'll give you a little bit of a history lesson. Chang,
yes,
this
sir.
Is now the time of the show.
Uh-oh.
When we talk about those things that made us angry back in the 80s. Man, but in honor of you,
to talk about
we now call them Changri. So Chang,
I'm gonna pat myself on the back real quick.
What made you Changri back in the 80s?
You know what made me Changri back in the 80s? And I'm going to dedicate these Changris to our talk on drugs and the good, the bad, and the ugly of drugs. You know what got me Changri back in the 80s?
What?
When it came to smoking joints? Somebody that wet the joint. And they lipped it all up till it was wet and you couldn't get another hit.
I take it that was bad.
Changri.
Okay.
You know what else made me Changri back in the 80s?
What?
Going to an alley to buy marijuana and getting a bag of stem seeds. You know what else got me Changri back in the 80s?
Yeah.
When I snorted a line of Peruvian and it made me poop and not feel the rush.
That's just wrong.
You know what got me Changri back in the 80s?
What's
when
that?
It came to drugs and alcohol?
Yeah.
When you had to be, oh, look at that guy. You know what made me Changri back in the 80s talking about drugs and alcohol?
What?
Lowenbrow dark beer.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, has been this week's Changris. If you have anything that you'd like to talk to us about that made you angry back in the 80s, go ahead and send us a message through our Facebook page, and we'll be more than happy to have Chang read your Changri on air.
Oh, yes.
By the way, that reminds me, you know, one time I tried to act like I did weed, right? That I was going to smoke weed, and I brought in a little Ziploc bag back then. I put a bunch of my mom's oregano.
Typical Italian move.
Yeah. And then I lit it up for my friends, and they're like, because it smells like weed, right? When you light it up. But you're just smoking yourself a little herb, literal.
That's all you're doing. And then you're going, hey, I could go for a pizza right now.
Well, I can go for some pasta. Jeez.
I can go for some pasta. You know what? Some garlic bread sounds good about right now.
You know, we do have a very special guest coming up, and Chang's going to tell you more about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming up on Back to the 80s, that's right, we have not stopped. We are going to keep going full throttle because we are going to give you 80s in a nutshell. Coming up, we have the lead singer of a band that came out in 1987, made a couple of albums in the 90s, changed their entire cast, and that is the band called Ampage. We have the lead singer, Mark Mason, coming on with us. He's going to open up about what the band is doing now, who's in the band, who left the band. Also, he's going to discuss a little bit of his struggles in his era. So you stay locked and loaded to Back to the 80s. Hopefully you're getting your feel to feel okay. Is that not right, Toscano?
100%. Back to the 80s radio. We'll be right back.
It certainly is a big bun.
It's a very big bun.
Big fluffy bun.
It's a very big fluffy bun.
Where's the beef?
Some hamburger places give you a lot less beef on a lot of bun.
Where's the beef?
At Wendy's, we serve a hamburger we modestly call a single. And Wendy's single has more beef than the Whopper or Big Mac. At Wendy's, you get more beef and less bun.
Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better. You're Wendy's kind of people.
Hey, if you listen to rock and roll radio in the 80s, then listen to this. Toscano and Chang, they will transport you back in time, back to the 80s.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is the infamous Chang, the voice inside your head that tells you to do bad things when you shouldn't. Welcome back to the 80s. We have a very special guest from the music industry, a musician and fellow 80s baby. Give it up for Mr. Mark Mason of Ampage. Mark, say hello to the boys and girls of Back to the 80s.
Hello, boys and girls. Back to the 80s.
Mark, how the heck are you? Thanks for joining us here at Back to the 80s Radio. I can't tell you, it's a thrill for us to have you here. So
I appreciate it. Thank you.
We've got a long road ahead of us, but you know, let's go ahead and go way back.
Okay. How far back do you want to go?
Back, as far back as, Mark, when you were a kid, were you extroverted or introverted?
You know, tried to be class clown, kind of, you know, goofy.
Nice.
So I guess that has quite a bit to do for the way you ended up coming into the music scene as a leader.
Yeah, I guess so. I've never really thought about it. You know, I've been in band since eighth grade. So
nice. Where exactly did you grow up, Mark?
Huntington Beach.
Oh, not too far from where me and Toscano first met eyes at. Where's in that? Huntington Beach.
Yeah, oh. Chang and I met in 2010 at the Academy of Radio and Television down Beach Boulevard and Edinger.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay. I grew up on Springdale and Warner. So.
Okay, so not far at all.
Who would you say is your greatest influence and probably the reason why you decided to jump into music? And like you said, eighth grade, so you were roughly about, what, 13, 14?
Yeah. A lot of things. My dad was a musician.
Right on.
So I grew up with my dad, what he called picking and grinning. So every weekend we had guys coming over playing guitar, banjo, drums, whatever in our living room.
Oh, nice.
So, I mean, I kind of grew up with that. And, listened to a lot of Creedence Clearwater, BTO, John Lennon, Beatles stuff.
Right on.
Yeah, my dad was definitely, he gave me my first guitar when I was 9. I wanted a bike, but I got a guitar. So, that's pretty much my influence.
You know? What kind of guitar did you get for your first guitar?
Guild Mark 16, I think it was.
Oh, not a bad guitar to start off with.
That's not a bad guitar to start off.
I still wanted a bike, but I got a guitar. So. And then I'm left-handed, so I'd be playing it left-handed or learning how to play it. And he'd grab it from me and turn it around and say, no, you got to play it right-handed because someday you'll be at a party and they'll have a guitar there and you'll want to play, but it's going to be a right-handed guitar, not a left-handed.
That's true.
And I'm like 14 years old going, dude, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that is true, though.
So were you able to accomplish the left-hand, right-hand thing?
Yeah, I play guitar right-handed. I'm left-handed everything else, but I play guitar right-handed.
As you're growing up in the music world, you know, you start off around eighth grade and then you get more experience and, not only in music, but in life as well. Any of those specific challenges that almost made you quit and almost just made you say, you know what, forget it, I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, I quit a few times. You know, I mean, I got into the drugs pretty heavily, especially in the 80s. I lost everything. I was homeless for 2 years living in the streets of Hollywood. So, I kind of blamed the drug abuse on the music. And so I would quit. I think I went up to San Francisco and got a day job doing something. And what I learned was there's way more drugs in the corporate world than the music world because they got more money than we did. So it was
no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. I had way more drugs available to me in the corporate world than the music. So I ended up going right back, but that was kind of what I got out of that.
Drugs are heavy, I think, in every industry. You know, I come from the construction era, side of things. And, you know, drugs are passed around and on jobs like nobody's business. I just think it's all about the freedom that drugs has played a role in society and the freedom people have with everyday use, hidden use, any type of a use. It's almost taboo that it's been socially okay for years without it being legally okay. So I think a lot of people, you know, like us in every walk of life, have that demon that is always facing us, whether it be drugs or alcohol.
Well, I liked it. So,
oh yeah, bro. I'm there with it.
That usually helps, right?
Yeah. I didn't like it. I wouldn't have done it, but I liked it too much. And, I paid a price for it and it was fine.
And, I think the majority of the entertainment world has not only enjoyed, but the other side of the story, which is paid the price.
Yeah.
Starting off from the 80s, because it really, really, I would say, in my opinion, really, really took off with the harder core drugs, I would say, in the 80s. Is that not correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And when I say pay the price, I also got a lot out of it besides the drugs and the highs and everything. I mean, the 90s album, I mean, the 90s and the first two 2000 albums, every one of those songs was, basically written from the 2 years I spent living in the streets. I mean, I got a lot of material out of it, a lot of material. So, all of it, Bamboozler, Lost and Learned, Downtown Playground, all that stuff. It's all from being a drug addict living in the streets. Had I not done that, I'd be down about 3 albums right now. So
there's nothing like pulling from your own heart and your experiences to create something beautiful. Don't you agree, bro?
Yeah. And I mean, to be honest with you, bro, I don't even know where the songs come from. I mean, when I write, it's like, they're gifts. Somebody's giving them to you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I could be writing down some lyrics, for a chorus or something. And technically and musically, this is correct, but that little light inside doesn't go on. But if I do it this way, the light comes on inside every time. Right. And I know that's the right one. So, I mean, who knows?
When Ampage was about to start, how did it come about, actually?
I went to, in high school, we opened it. We started Ampage in high school with me, a guitar player named Henry, Michael Kroger, our drummer that ended up being with me most of the 40 years of Ampage. And Peter Allen was the original singer for about 3 months. And so it all started in high school. We went to Hawaii on our way to Australia to do a tour, and things kind of broke up. So I came back to Hollywood and ended up kind of redoing a new Ampage, which was what I used on the first album, mm-hmm. With Craig Beck, who was an amazing guitarist. I think he was like best guitarist of the year that year in Hollywood. Mark London was an amazing drummer. And yeah, I mean, that was the first album. It wasn't any of the original guys from the high school band, but it was what we used for the first album in 87. We were doing shows up and down the coast, and we were playing at the Stone in San Francisco. Mm. And when we got done playing, this guy comes up to us and goes, "Oh, you guys are magic. You're magic. You know, I must work with you." And it turns out it's Mitch Mitchell, the drummer from Jimi Hendrix.
Nice.
And I didn't know who the guy was, but my drummer was like, "That's Mitch Mitchell. It's Mitch Mitchell." I'm like, "I don't know who that is." Anyway, so we continued to party through the night, and we got kicked out of our hotel, as we did. And Mitch put us all up in his hotel. 3 days later, he came down to Hollywood, and he lived with us for about 6 months while we played the Champagne Caviar album.
I want to ask you about a certain song, Pussycat. I've heard that song over and over again, and I have to tell you, bro, I'm taken with that song. Lyrically, you've got a very strong lyrical presence, but the thing that captivated me about that track was how you introed it in with piano, kind of giving it that kind of barroom / Elton John, Bernie Taupin feel. But then when you had, I believe homeboy's name is Hook, on the harmonica, the harp, I mean, dude, it turned into like a bluesy kind of I want to say circus, but you know what I mean? Kind of a burlesque feel. And to me, that's probably one of my favorite songs from you guys. Where did you get those lyrics from, bro? Where were you at in your state of mind and at that time that you came up with that song and the way it kind of captured the attention the way it did?
That was like the early 90s. And I had met Sly Stone, you know, from Sly and the Family Stone.
Nice, right.
And so I got to hang out with him a few times. And then one night I had a dream that me and Sly were hanging out, because we were. And Sly said, "Let's write a song." I said, "Great, what do you want to write?" But I don't know. Let's compare girls to cats, you know. And so basically I wrote the entire song note for note, word for word in the dream. And then I woke up and wrote it all down and then went back to sleep. And the next day, the whole song.
It was born. Wow.
Yeah, every word, every note. And then later on, a lot of the songs, especially if I was stuck on something with the song, I would always keep pad and paper next to my bed, mm-hmm. and just keep drilling the chorus or whatever I was stuck on in my head as I was going to sleep, and try to unfix it like that. So,
how much did family play a role or not play a role in your career?
I mean, it was everything. My dad, like I said, was a musician. He taught mm-hmm. me how to play. He taught me all my chords. My mom was a creative writing teacher at a high school. So nice. She taught me how to write. And I mean, I had the best of both. You know, I mean, I had my mom taught me about lyrics and how to write lyrics and creative writing. And my dad taught me the music side of it. So I kind of had the best of both.
What other career do you think you would have went into had you not been blessed with the gifts to entertain musically?
Treasure hunting.
Nice.
Nice.
Oh, dude, that nice. I would have been so down for that. to go find sunken treasure. And my theory is that I know where to go. I mean, it's like they put lighthouses where all the ships were crashing, where they were wrecking.
Right,
so that is true.
I'd go to Florida and just starting off where all the lighthouses are and start going out 2 miles and start checking all there. So
I would not have been a bad idea.
Definitely been a treasure hunter.
You're listening to Back to the 80s Radio. If you just joined us, we have Mark Mason here from Ampage. Don't go away. We're going to have a lot more with Mark the Chang at Back to the 80s Radio. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is the doctor speaking. I detect a large amount of social media usage in your life. And hence, I am recommending you go back to the 80s.
If you can't wear a spandex jumpsuit, what can you do? This is
Back to the 80s.
Welcome back to Back to the 80s, all my cats and kitties. We are sitting with Mr. Ampage, Mark Mason. Mark, you've opened up on a couple of pretty personal things. I want to thank you on behalf of me and Toscano for talking about those things. Was your view of fame and fortune all that you had ever imagined, or was it worse?
I never was into the fame and fortune thing. To me, it was just about the music and playing. I mean, I love performing. I love, I have no respect for money, which is probably not a great thing. So money never really matters to me about anything, no matter where it comes from. But to me, it was just, it was about the songs first. And of course the recording and making them the best I could. And then performing. I mean, for me, that was everything. Mm-hmm. I don't care much about fame or fortune or anything else. You know, I had my 15 minutes here. I got a little 15 minutes there.
Right.
And it's like, you know, who cares?
Mark, do you think there was a greater high in being on stage when it was your turn? People there in the audience. I mean, do you think that was a greater high than anything else?
Oh, 100%. I can name some of my best shows. And one was the when we opened up for Def Leppard in Puerto Rico. That audience was just amazing. And to have them, I could see the first 20 rows like singing along word for word, you know, and that for me was the rush, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a song that they weren't even supposed to know. It was we'd go into Words, which was our single at the time. Right. And that's usually when we go into that, everyone goes crazy. That's the one they hear on the radio. They didn't go crazy. So I was a little worried. And then we went into Downtown Playground. And we didn't know that that's what the radio station was playing. They didn't really like Words. So they were playing Downtown.
Right.
And we went into Downtown. The audience went just nuts. And they're screaming and dancing and singing along. And I mean, it was just, it was the best high I could ever have. And the energy you get from that kind of an audience, I mean, you're up for hours afterwards. I mean,
yeah,
you're just trying to come down off of it. So that's better than any drug and way better than any kind of fame or fortune or money or anything else.
Right on. Who was one of the craziest bands or acts that you traveled with that you were like, wow, these cats are pretty rock and roll out there?
a lot. I mean...
All of them, right?
Pretty much. I mean, everyone had their own little thing. I mean, we did a show. We got to play with Eric Clapton and Billy Idol. Mm. And so we were the first band. And then Clapton was right after us.
A lot of whiskey and blow.
No, I mean, actually, I was sober at the time. I think he was too, actually. I'm actually 30 years sober right now.
Right on to you.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. But so right after we played, it was outdoor show. I went late. I kind of was sitting on the grass with a couple of guys in my band, and Clapton walks up to me and introduces himself like I don't know who God is, you know. Yeah. And I'm just looking up, shaking his hand. He's like, I really like that third song of yours, man. You know, and I was just like, wow, Eric Clapton came up to me, you know. That's and cool. So then he goes on stage, and then I'm backstage with Billy, and Clapton started going to Billy's set time. And Billy Idol's like going, Mace, you got to go tell God to get off the stage. He's going into my set time. And I'm like, Billy, there's no fucking way I'm going to tell God to get off the stage. And then Billy's like, well, I guess I'm Billy Idol. I guess I could tell him to get off stage. And right then Clapton goes into this kind of like a, it was kind of like a, striptease type song, you know. Mm-hmm. And then Billy just starts swinging on the pole backstage and ripping his clothes off, and I mean, just funniest guy I've ever met in my life. Yeah, not a lot of crazy. Just for me, it was always, you know, just like Rick Allen from Def Leppard when I worked with him. I mean, one of the funniest guys I think I've ever worked with or met as just a human being. I mean, just hysterically funny.
So since we're talking here on this show, we talk about the 80s, only 80s, right?
Okay.
And although we're going to talk about a lot of stuff of what Ampage is getting ready to do, but going to the 80s as a decade, does that have any special meaning to you? Or are you the kind that says, you know what, I hated the 80s period? Or, I mean, what does the 80s decade mean to you?
To me, it was more about just that was my youth. I mean, that was my 20s. I was born in 1960, so... You know, 1980, I was 20, and 1990, I was 30. So all my 20s were in the 80s. You know, that's where I grew up. That's, you know, the Sunset Strip on the 80s, in the 80s was like, it was like going to college. Right. I mean, yeah. When you look back at it, because, you know, we're all trying to get the record deals. We're all playing the same clubs. You know, we all got the same girlfriends. We've all got the same, you know, everything. And we're all trying to get that same thing. We're with Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, Poison. I mean, everybody. We're all, you know, and it's then later on, you kind of see who kind of made it up to here and who got up to here and, mm-hmm. you know, who died and who didn't make it at all. And, you know, I mean, it was like the class of 87 for us, you know, mm-hmm. and everybody was pretty cool. I mean, you know, we all got along pretty good and we had a good time. So when I think of the 80s, well, first off, they say if you can remember the 80s, you probably weren't there.
Yeah.
That being said, I am reminded of a lot of stuff I had no idea about, but it was, for me, it was a good time. It was my youth. I mean, it was my college years in rock. Yeah.
What's in the works for Ampage this year? And what are you going to hit us with?
Well, up to now, Ampage has done, 8 albums, 9 movies, including the Disney movie Brink.
Right.
We charted.
Yeah, you
twice.
Did quite a bit of NBC weekly movies too. Yeah, brother.
A lot of those. The guys that are in Ampage now have been with me about 8 years. The drummer we have has been with us 6 years. He took Mike Kroger's place. If you remember, Mike Kroger was with me in high school. We started this band together.
Yeah.
And he was with me, except for the first album. He's with me on all the other albums, all the tours. And, you know, in 2016, he passed away of leukemia.
Sorry to hear that, brother.
Yeah. We were working on the Bridge of Souls album. And he kept saying, man, I'm so tired. You know, I must be out of shape or something. And so he laid his drums down, did an amazing job as usual. And he went and saw a doctor and they said, dude, you got leukemia. And he died 6 weeks later. He never even got to hear the album.
Oh, wow. Man,
brother.
And so I called him up the last time I talked to him. You know, I was like, you know, talking about, you know, high school and starting the band and the tours and Def Leppard, all the stuff we've done over the years. And then I was like, you know, dude, forget that stuff. Let's talk about you. He's like, forget that. He goes, let's talk about the new album. This is my last masterpiece on drums. He goes, you know, Mace, you got to promise me to push it on your side. You push it from your side, I'll push it from mine. And those are the last words he said to me. But as far as the 2022, so when Kroger died, I had promised him that we were going to push that album. So we started auditioning drummers and I was being kind of a dick because they weren't Kroger, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And they had audition, they play. And I'm just like, I'm being a dick to them. You know, I don't even want them there. And so we went through a lot of auditions and then finally I was like, well, I guess I better find a drummer. I kind of promised the guy on his deathbed, you know? Yeah. So I started watching some video of some drummers on YouTube and ran across this one drummer. And so I called him up, said, hey, you know, I saw you on YouTube. You remind me a lot of my old drummer. I said, where are you from? And he's like, oh, this little town in Indiana, which was 5 minutes from where Kroger was from.
Wow.
It was weird. Anyways, long story short, he became our drummer. So he's been with us ever since. And the guy's amazing. Amazing drummer, great backup vocalist, and fun guy. I mean, the guys I have now, I wish I had the guys I have now back in the
1980s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
We would have done a lot better and definitely would have had a hell of a lot more fun. Back in the 80s, I mean, like I said, we were all trying to get that record deal. We're all trying to, you know, be rock stars or whatever.
And trying to give it rich and famous. That's what it was all about back then. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, it was like we took it too seriously. And I mean, I took it way too seriously. You know, I mean, I took it way too seriously. And I don't now. And I'm having more fun on stage now than I've ever had in my entire life. If you like it, great. If you don't, you know, great. I have
piss
no
off. Right on, brother. Right on to
you
that.
So, I mean, I say whatever I want on stage. I do whatever I want. And I don't care, you know.
Right,
so
right.
It's so much fun now. And I wish I would have done this back in the 80s. I really do. For 2022, 2021, we just released the Season in Hell album that we recorded. Which is probably one of my favorite albums now anyway. Actually,
I'm definitely going to check it out, my brother, that one.
We've been told it's our best so far, actually. So we got locked down like everyone else did in COVID.
Right.
I didn't think I was going to do another album. All of a sudden, I had 4 months of time on my hands and nothing to do. So I'd go get my coffee every morning, walk down into my studio and turn on the machine and see what I came up with. And within a month, I had 12 new songs that I really liked. And so I brought the guys in, we recorded it. Dwayne Barron, you know, Ozzy, Ozzy's producer, and and he's produced almost all our albums now. I sent them over to him, and he really liked it, and he did an amazing job, you know, finishing it up for us. So this time we released that about a month ago, and that I wanted to also, because it may be my last album, I don't know, but since I started my first album on vinyl, I wanted to at least end with vinyl. So we put this album out on, you know, your regular downloads, but also on CD and also on 12-inch vinyl. Nice. So it's on 12-inch red transparent vinyl.
Dude, that is old school, brother.
That's fantastic. Especially because of comeback that vinyl has had in these last years.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. And if, believe it or not, that same comeback that vinyl has had, cassettes are making a comeback. It's been
a trip, because when we give these things out, you know, or I hand them off to people or send them off, people love it. It's this 12-inch, there's the band, you know?
Yeah.
Not this little whatever. I mean, they're like reading the stuff on the album like they used to do in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, they can touch it, feel it.
Yeah,
you know,
you're giving people the experience of what we had.
Big photos and lots of stuff to read about the band. And I'm going to finish up your question with for 2022. We've been working on a documentary for the last 3 years during the 80s, 90s, 2000s. I mean, most of it, I got video. Almost all our shows have been videotaped.
Nice.
I've got over 100 hours worth of videotapes that we gave to Colin Felger. He's the director and producer. The film's called Falling Higher. It's almost done. And it just takes us through all the 80s with footage, you know, live footage. Right. And the 90s and the 2000s. It's narrated by Jake Busey, Gary Busey's son.
Nice.
Jake was in Contact and a bunch of other movies. Great guy. And I've known Gary Busey, his dad, for years. Gary played on one of our albums, actually.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, he did D-Day on one of the albums. I forget which one. But I wanted, that song was Countdown Armageddon in the year 2011. I wanted like an evangelist preacher in the beginning as a song. Fade in. And who else but Gary Busey? I was like, Gary, for sure.
Dude, yeah.
Sure. I called Gary up and he was awesome. He came down, he had a Bible in one hand, and Dwayne Barron was mixing it down, and he nailed it in one take. I was laughing so hard because he just nailed it. And I was laughing, and he's like, "Oh, dude, was that okay?" And I'm like, "Oh, dude, that was awesome. That's why I'm laughing. I'm not laughing at you. It was awesome."
Nice.
So we ended up using that. But yeah, so the film should be out by January for sure. And it's got a lot of stuff in it. I mean, you know, I did that Rockers Against Pay to Play thing. I organized musicians back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Against that. So I forgot I had all that news footage. Our 97 tour, when we're getting ready to head out, that's when the Heaven's Gate cult killed themselves, 39 people suicided. And the name of our label was called Higher Source. And their subsidiary company was Higher Source. So the next thing I know, I'm on the news with Tom Brokaw holding up my CD going, "Tom, we got nothing to do with this cult." And, you know, and that should have just been the end of it. But no, it's the news. So they melted into a 20-minute piece on poor Ampage. They're getting ready to go on tour, and the label spent $1.3 million on them. And you know, they people.
That's some good advertising for you guys.
I know,
but Tom Brokaw, brother.
I know, I like Tom, but that's how we charted. I mean, the next day, every radio station in the country is playing us. They saw it. They got the joke that, you know, like if we shouldn't even been on there. I mean, we had nothing to do with anything. So, it was a crazy year. That 97 was the most craziest year of my career, actually. I mean, it was that and all that went with it. And then when we recorded the album, you know, we brought Earl Slick, the guitarist from John Lennon, and Bowie joined the band. And so we recorded, since he was in the band, we went into the record plant in Hollywood and recorded Give Me Some Truth by John Lennon's, because he's the Lennon guitarist. And me being the lead singer, you know, I change lyrics. I mean, I do that all the time, but I usually do it on my own songs, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And on this time I changed some of the lyrics on the John Lennon song. And so the album came out, and I get a letter from EMI Publishing New York saying, "I'm getting sued by the Lennon estate. You can't change a John Lennon lyric." Yeah. And,
That's right. I don't know who told you you could change my music up, but you seem like a good cat anyway. So, mate, you know, have fun with it.
Honestly, I was more shocked than he actually listens to our album, let alone the lyrics, let alone figure out that I changed a word or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, Slick flew back to New York, played it for Yoko, and Yoko liked my changes, thank God, and said if John was alive, he probably would have made similar changes. So then I get a letter from EMI Publishing New York saying that I wrote the song with John Lennon, but for $1 sign all royalties back to the Lennon estate. Oh. So now I got a letter saying I wrote a song with John Lennon, which became the joke.
Right. That alone is worth more than a dollar.
Well, everybody, it's that time of the night where we have to hit the road, say adios, arrivederci, hasta la vista, and hasta mañana, and orale. We want to thank our rock and roll brother and our guest, Mr. Mark Mason of Ampage. Mark, a billion changtastic wishes on your future with the band. Hopefully you don't give it up.
Thanks for being with us, Mark.
Thanks for being with me and Toscano, brother. You have a great night, and keep the fight, bro. Stay lifted and gifted.
You too. Thanks, guys.
And this is Mark Mason with Ampage, and living in a virtual world, you got to check him out. Back to the 80s radio.
Story line.
You've been listening to the one and only Back to the 80s radio show. I'm Toscano, and I just want to say thank you for joining us. And throughout our talk of the things that we weren't supposed to do in the 80s, but we still did, told you we have some good stuff and some bad stuff to talk about in the 80s. They weren't all good, and the bad stuff has made us learn lots of valuable life lessons.
Right.
And one of the biggest lessons we have today is that we can tell you for a fact that it's much better to get high on life. From myself, and I know from Chang, we want to wish you a happy week, a safe week, and we'll talk to you next Friday on Back to the 80s.
Chang here till next Friday, and I release you to another weekend. Have a Changtastic weekend, and remember, do not drink and drive. You might kill somebody, you may kill yourself. Think of somebody else beside yourself. Do something big. Stand for something bigger than yourself. And remember, always put a smile on your face. Don't let nothing get you down. Let no one bully you. Till next Friday, when you hear me and Toscano's beautiful voices, I bid you an adios, arrivederci, hasta mañana, hasta la vista, sayonara. And to all my homies in the barrio, órale, putos. Till next Friday.